It's stardate 95332.75. And you're listening?
Are you even sure on that? Did you look
it up? I'm 100% sure.
We just gained so many more nerdy listeners because of that intro. Man.
You guys are welcome. And you're listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. Welcome to the show. Tonight we are covering the series premiere of Star Trek Discovery. And guys, we just watched this thing. We just got done watching it not even 10 minutes ago. So you're going to get our instant reactions to the series premiere. We're not going to spoil anything about episode 2 because I know episode 2 also aired today. But we will drop a podcast about episode 2 right after we record this one. So if you go to StarTrekPod.com, you'll find a podcast all about episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery as well. I really am excited to talk about this episode. But before we do that, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Mike Moody.
Ashley Marino.
Clyde Haynes.
And Grant Davis. That's how I'm going to say it. Grant Davis.
Grant Davis.
Wahoo! Pew, pew. Grant Davis.
Pew, pew.
Just staring at my computer, reading my notes. And just to let you know, you can subscribe to the podcast at StarTrekPod.com. Click on the Apple Podcast link. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. And if you want to hear more Star Trek Discovery Theory discussion, you can listen to bonus episodes on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
And give us that money. Or whatever they have in Star Trek world. Monies?
No, there's no monies.
It's like the credits? Future monies.
What? I don't know. Credits?
Gold-plated latinum.
Latinum.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Gold-plated latinum. We'll discuss...
Grant has no idea what we're talking about.
I don't know what Star Trek is.
Oh, but the glimmer in his eye is adorable.
Just to reorient people who didn't hear our first episode last week. So I'm Mike. I am the very enthusiastic but somewhat critical fan. How would you describe yourself, Clyde?
I like to think of myself as the cool everyday fan, but because I've read fan fiction and literature, I'm the nerd of the group. I'm the nerd of the nerds.
I was going to say.
You're the biggest Trekkie nerd. When Mike said, I need to look up the star date on my computer, you're like, I already know it.
I'm not quite there. I'm like a half step from there, but I'm there.
I was going to say, you just said you're cool. I have photo evidence to the contrary that we just took tonight, which you can find at StarTrekPod.com. Ashley?
I got into Star Trek watching STNG. I watched some of the original series. I think I'm a casual fan. Like, I really am just into a lot of pop culture things, and Star Trek is one of them.
And I'm Grant once again, and I'm pretty much the biggest expert here. I've never seen any of this.
In what?
In bullshitting, maybe? I don't know. No, I don't know anything about this world. I didn't even know that they don't have money. That's unfortunate. Because we can't have like a little relatable anecdote for when we're pimping our patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Star Trek Pod.
Grant says that, but I can recall back in the 70s seeing you giving a few people the Vulcan hello like a goddamn expert. So don't let it fool you, kids.
It was a different time back there.
All right, episode 1, the Vulcan hello. Surprisingly not a sex act.
We have yet to see. It could be.
That's true.
TBD.
TBD. Okay, so I kind of want to go first and let you guys know what I felt about this episode, but I feel like I should cede the floor because I'm probably going to be talking a lot. So, Ashley, quick hot take. What'd you think about the series premiere?
Yeah, so I was going into it apprehensive but excited. One of the things I was worried about is I'm a really big STNG fan, and so I was worried that going over to a new series, it like my expectations were already like so colored about what I liked about the other one that I wasn't going to be like super open to what I was seeing. And the first 30 seconds to maybe 4 minutes, I was a little nervous. The over exposition was strange. The drawing the picture through the sand wasn't super into that. And then basically, as soon as I got back on the ship and everything after, I loved it. I'm super excited.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Clyde.
Well, you guys know I'm also on another podcast called TV Pilot Watching, so I'm big into pilots. Love pilots. This was a pilot. It felt like a pilot. It worked like a pilot. And so I was super excited and then saw that there were a few things that were like, oh, you're giving me your resume when you introduce and you've known each other for like forever. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to have to suspend belief a little bit because this is a pilot and you're trying to let me know completely irrelevant information. But beyond that, much like Ashley said, once we got through like the first commercial break and a half, it started to pick up a little bit. And I was like, wow, this is pretty good. Like, I can see where they're going and what they're setting up. And I can already tell, like, I'm into this.
Grant, this might actually be your first Star Trek pilot, right? The first pilot you've ever watched or
yes.
premiere.
Yeah, this is okay. The first one.
All right, before I talk about what I think, I really want to know what you think. I'm very curious as you being the non-Star Trek guy.
Well, I mean, I had certain preconceived notions of what a Star Trek show is and what a Star Trek pilot might be. I was expecting something pretty clinical and a little bit mundane. I mean, I you know, you kind of hope for a little bit of excitement to get people in, but then you just want like the... It seems like a lot of Trekkies just want the nerd shit. Like,
maybe.
I want them to just be really calculating and sensitive about, I don't know. But I was, in a way, kind of crossing my fingers with that intro that was not good. The dialogue was heavy and kind of rough. And I was hoping, like, oh, is it going to be this tone throughout? Because at least there's something hilarious that we can discuss week after week about how bad it is.
Yeah.
But just like Ashley said, as soon as they got done with that desert exposition, they got on the ship and started introducing those characters in that world. That all gelled so harmoniously and set up a great pilot for a great series, or a series that I'm very excited to continue watching.
I think the thing that threw me was if you look at the series, they typically always start in like the shipyard with assembling the crew and then going out on this voyage, and you get to meet everyone in a very kind of peaceful, like, hey, we're all excited, we're about to go. And this was not like that at all. Like, we started out like in mid-mission where you're trying to like figure out what the hell is going on.
This was very different. I appreciated how different it was. I knew what to expect on a certain level. I haven't been reading spoilers, but I've been reading a lot about this show. So, you know, there were a few beats I figured it would hit. But yeah, just like you guys, I'm glad to hear that we're kind of all on the same page. We kind of all felt a little worried in the first act, maybe more than a little worried. Our screening was almost going to turn into Mystery Science Theater for a minute. It did for a minute.
I was just writing jokes at that point.
I know, yeah. but I think maybe at the second act, or it was right around when Michael Burnham, our main character here, played by Sonequa Martin-Green, maybe let go of that Vulcan affectation and just came out like a hot-blooded human ready to fire on those Klingons. And that's when I started to relate to this character. That's when I felt like this is a character I can follow. And that was maybe, what, 20 minutes in, 10 minutes in? And from then on, I'm like, you know, I'm ready to follow not necessarily this crew, but I'm ready to follow her. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to follow the Klingons and figure out what their nationalistic viewpoint and where they're going to go with that. So, yeah, I was pretty intrigued. I wasn't blown away. I really liked the special effects. Those were great.
Dude, the world they built... I mean, all of this, like the plotting, the structure of the episode, visuals, it all came together very nicely. And it also had a very modern feel that felt that it was heavily influenced by other contemporary dramas and what they're doing now, more so than that it was necessarily trying to mimic what Star Trek franchises of the past have done.
No, it definitely was not trying to mimic Star Trek franchises or a series of the past. I think Ashley... After we watched it, you're like, okay, usually on Star Trek, they'll go to a planet that's like the Ren Faire. And
yes, yep. And things will be weird.
And things will be weird. And they'll fight an enemy, but really the enemy's just misunderstood and everything's okay. That's not what this is.
No.
So, okay, the three Star Trek fans in the room, are you okay with the changes? Are you okay with the more modern style storytelling? And this is definitely going to be a serialized thing. Are we cool with that?
Yeah, I think we are absolutely cool with it because, okay, so I'm a guy who's going to go back and watch TNG or Voyager or DS9, you know, especially in the summers when there's nothing on. Like, I'm going to go back and do that. But today, like, if I'm looking for something that's on today, I'm looking for something a little bit different. Like, the world I live in is different, and And so I don't want just the same old Star Trek just with new characters. And they've given us something that has a different pacing. It has a different beat and movement. And it like we've all said, it was a little interesting kind of getting used to that, kind of like a new pair of shoes. But once you get in there, like, oh, okay, I see it. And I really, I got comfortable with it in a hurry. So I'm excited about this new feel.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because it's definitely darker than the Star Treks I'm used to, and certainly darker than like the first episode. I mean, I think about maybe not the first, but like one of the first episodes of STNG. I think they meet Data and they think it's a little weird. That's the episode. That's all that happens. And so it was a little overwhelming when I was like, oh, holy shit, like there's explosions and all the stuff going on. But I like the change. I have to agree with you. And I also like how much the characters, they're still kind of bombastic, still Star Trek-y. They're still, you know, they don't exist in the real world. But they're a little bit potentially rounder and a little bit less symbolic. Like, I'm thinking in particular of Saru, who's the first science officer, kind of butts heads a little bit in the first episode with the other people on the bridge. And you learn that in his world, there are prey and there are hunters, and that who he is that he's prey on his world. And
cattle, so he said.
Yeah, cattle. And so in addition to being this kind of like, good Lord, I got dark quick speech that he gives when shit starts to get really real, It also kind of gives a little color to some of the characters who might behave in ways that seem odd or aren't, you know, Picard level or you know, level honorable. And I thought that was really cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I think we got some really good character exposition. It was dropped in really well throughout the story, especially with Saru. But, you know, you brought up a character. So let's kind of break down these characters and talk about them.
Okay.
Sonequa Martin-Green. In my notes here, I had that we're going to talk about it. The A plot, the B plot, the C plot. This is all A plot. This is all Sonequa Martin-Green's story.
Everything was driven by her.
It's completely driven by her. And when it comes to modern dramas, that's what I really like. I really like to see something that revolves completely around a fascinating character and follow her on the journey. So what did you guys think of the character and her performance and about the fact that she's completely driving the story here?
So I'll say that I typically like at least an A plot and a B plot if you've got an ensemble that I care about, right? So you've got a side story. So typically in Star Trek, you've got this A plot where everybody's involved in this mission, and then this B plot might be Worf struggling to figure out what to do with Alexander, and you know, kind of in the background, right?
Or everyone's favorite B plot,
right? Or some romance between, you know, Riker and a fictional holograph character.
I mean, if we had a B plot, it might be that kind of flip perspective that we see with the Vulcans. Fuck okay. The Klingons. You guys know what I mean.
That's Klingons. Staying in.
Third time's the charm.
I'm not going to say it again.
Yeah, well, you're right. It was the same story, but it was from the flip perspective, right. which I really liked.
I did too. But to get back to your point, your question, Mike, I like her character, and I was struggling at first because when she is the human Michael Burnham, she's great. Like, it's passionate. I'm in. Like, I'm transported. When she's pretending to be a Vulcan, I'm trying to figure out, is it just bad? Like, the pretending to be bad? Or is Sonequa Martin-Green acting bad? Like, her wanting to be a Vulcan is just poor. And so what am I saying? But when she got robotic, it was just kind of like, all right, I'm ready for you to move on to the next scene. But otherwise, I was captivated, so I'm okay. But I would like to see some of the other characters fleshed out. And I'm hoping that we'll see more of that.
It did definitely feel wooden, her Vulcan aspect that she was doing. Like the unforgivable line in the desert where the captain was like, how far is that storm away? And she's like, I would say maybe it's about 2 hours and 17 minutes and 22 seconds. I was like, no. Who wrote that line and why did she have to deliver it in such a unpassionate and boring way? There's a certain charm, I thought, to when I've the little I've seen of Spock and how he plays a Vulcan, even in his sort of like detached emotional sense. And when she's doing that, It's not there at all.
But
when, like you said, like once she gets like charged with like a passion and a drive for something, like even when she just wanted to take the little transponder or what, the little ship thing over to the Vulcan Klingon ship.
the Klingon sarcophagus ship.
The Klingon sarcophagus ship. Yeah. She was like really excited and like pushing for that. And yeah. I thought this is what's interesting about this character.
It was that scene that I wasn't necessarily sold on the character, but I really started to warm up to her and the series. Mm-hmm. And that scene where she pipes up and she says, no, I'm going to go explore this. And she's defying orders. She throws away that Vulcan affectation, which, you know, I'm confused too. I don't know if Sonequa Martin-Green doesn't do a good Vulcan impression, or is it the fact that this character is in emotional conflict with that duality in her upbringing? She's a human who was raised Vulcan, and that is what we're supposed to be reading from the performance.
Well, the actress can certainly at least hide behind that if that's not the case.
Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely what I was going for.
What do you think, Ashley? Are you sold on the inner conflict of the character being maybe half Vulcan, half human? How did you feel about the performance and the character?
Yeah, I guess for me, I'm just less interested in a series that would feature like all Vulcans or something. You know, it's not as it's not going to be as, I think, compelling TV.
No, I agree.
No
one's watching that. Yeah. So I think that's just the thing that draws me to when her more human side comes out. I also think, quite frankly, it's why, you know, when you think about the J.J. Abrams movies, Spock comes across as much more human in those than I think he does in the original series. And it's just that if you want to make the character relatable, it's easier that way. So I, on every level, I think I preferred her character on that side. I do think it's reasonable to think that she spent so long kind of wearing this mask, but that she isn't particularly good at it, right? Like, that would be a very strange world to live in, where you're not supposed to be excited to see your friends. You're not supposed to be kind of, you know, just basic stuff, not even emotional at like funerals or weddings or something, but just on a day to day, the things that we do, the things that we find funny, none of that existing. I would think you would have to kind of practice at that mask. Mm. And so I was willing to interpret it as that rather than potentially commenting on her skill as an actor to do that.
Right.
That said, I will say, I was constantly, and I continue to be constantly amazed when Brent Spiner plays Data playing Sherlock Holmes or plays Data playing some other character and nails it. And that's kind of the gold standard, at least in the Star Trek universe, for me, for kind of pulling off something like that.
I think we're going to see, and I think when we talk about episode 2, we'll talk about this more, but we're definitely going to see an interesting character evolution going on with this character. But let's talk about, well, okay, this is Star Trek Discovery, and in a number of promo photos, a number of promo videos, we've seen the ship Discovery. We've seen her crew. We've seen certain actors that are going to play, this guy's playing the doctor, this person's playing the captain. We didn't see a lot of those actors and characters in this episode. So unlike a Star Trek pilot of the past, it wasn't, like you said, Clyde, it wasn't setting up the crew. It was very different, and I was really surprised that we started off in such a different place. We didn't even start off on the ship that we're going to be following, right? We started off on the Shenzhou instead, and then we didn't even start with the Shenzhou. Our first image was of the Klingons. So a lot of this just threw me, and I was like, what am I watching here? But I did find it compelling. I did enjoy the changes. But let's talk about those Klingons. Ashley, I know you had some words about the look. And especially since we were so close up on that one when the show started.
I did. So, you know, the overall style and aesthetic of the Klingon ship, I like. It's sort of like evil, like Art Nouveau elf or something. And I'm mm-hmm. totally cool with that. I think it looks good. The Klingons themselves, the kind of shiny disco look was a little strange. It was like they were all David Bowie fans or something. It was a little...
But their face was shiny.
Their faces were shiny. Their armor was very sparkly. Mm-hmm. It seemed a little fancy for some Klingons. But overall, I liked it. I'm cool with it. It grew on me.
I'm inclined to believe that there's no air conditioning on a Klingon ship.
Oh, that is actually a good point.
That's just kind of how I'm looking at it.
That's why they shave their heads. It's hot.
It's hot. Yeah. It's hot, and everybody's just kind of glowing a little bit.
Yeah, I
have a bad acne outbreak. That much oil. Mm.
So, Grant, what do you think of the Klingon language? It's beautiful language. There are a lot of fans who are very into it.
I found it a little bit language tedious, but, you know, it just becomes one of those things I have to tune out for a bit.
Yeah.
The lead guy, the lead Klingon.
T'Kuvma.
T'Kuvma. I found it kind of remarkable, like, how high-pitched his voice was in comparison to the brash kind of deep gravel voice that most of the other Klingons have. But I don't know if that was intentional so you can like really like distinguish him when you're focusing at the bottom half of the screen like the whole time reading. I'm like, I don't know what's going on up there. It looks kind of cool, but like, I guess there are people that memorize Klingon so they don't have to read subtitles. Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes.
Lots of people. They're listening to you right now.
There has been whole weddings between Klingons in the Klingon language.
Grant, be very careful not to insult those people right now.
Or else they're going to give me a little bit of the Vulcan hello.
You would be so lucky, sir. I'd take a Vulcan hello from a Klingon any day. Do you know that they are renowned lovers?
Whoa.
Yeah, although they are warrior class, they are accomplished poets and great lovers. Although the word on the street is that they are also quite rough. So if you don't have the strength of a Klingon woman, which I'm guessing you do not.
It's true. I don't even have the strength of a human man.
Yeah, you might want to just tell them to go easy. It's your first time.
Hold off on this Vulcan hello. I'll take a Spocker.
Yeah,
that's the same thing. It's the same thing. Yeah. That's a street name for it. Okay, I really did like these Klingons. I was kind of on the fence about the look, but, you know, I don't know Klingon language. Like, I don't speak it in public. But I really did appreciate that all the scenes on the Klingon ship were in Klingon.
They fully embrace it.
They completely embraced it. They embraced it as the first scene.
I mean, most shows, when they do foreign language now, they don't.
Right.
They don't like start a little bit in that language and then just break it off into English, like it transitions or whatever. Like that was kind of a thing for a while. But I remember like the Americans fully does Russian. On Lost, they would always like have Jin.
But
and
this Sun is Klingon. Korean.
Yeah,
okay. This is made up.
I mean, you got to think about it. Like if you were watching Game of Thrones, they don't go in Dothraki this long, right?
Sure,
it's true.
Like I mean, and if you think about previous series, they pretty much speak English even when they're on a Klingon ship. It just doesn't go on. But this was really like another language, and you're reading a lot of it, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It definitely builds this they're a separate world kind of feeling, and so I was like, all right, I also am aware that I'm reading and I'm not seeing anything that's going on the screen. So I
did enjoy the, I guess, nationalist perspective that the Klingon leader has. It was a little by rote. I think the actor did a great job with it. I liked the introduction of Vok, I guess the albino Klingon. Did anybody catch who's playing that guy? Because the production held it a secret about who's playing him and what the character is. Most likely that's because of what happens in episode 2. But
who's playing him?
I don't know. I'm looking online and I can't. The rumor was that it's going to be Sam Witwer. He was a guy from Battlestar Galactica, and he's very well known to genre fans. Battlestar, he was in Smallville. He's done a number of things. Being Human, he was a lead on that. But I'm not sure if that was him or not. And as seeing as we're recording minutes after the premiere, we don't have that information on us. But I'm pretty intrigued by this character. What did you feel about the dynamics on the Klingon ship? Did you find them compelling or more compelling than what was going on the Shenzhou, Ashley?
Yeah, I found it really compelling. I, of course, always like, you know, its heart, Star Trek is a kind of, you know, optimistic, hopeful view of a world, but also commentary on our current world. So it's like, here's what we could be if we could get our act together. But in the meantime, let's, like, through, you know, metaphor and allegory, look at our current situation. And I thought they did a really good job with it, both kind of capturing in the Klingons this kind of nationalist, kind of pro-war, us versus them kind of mentality. Like, it doesn't matter what the other side says, it's going to be lies anyways, sort of thing going on. But at the same time, spending time on the Klingon ship the way that you did, you can kind of see where they're coming from. They're coming from this fractured empire kind of a deal. And so I thought it was a good balance.
I thought so too. And even though maybe they don't look like the Klingons we remember, I think this is very much in line with Star Trek lore. Because mm-hmm. before we became friends with the Klingons, we've heard this is who they were. This is who they were. They were people who they were just fight or die. They're, you know, it was all about the family, you know? I'm sorry.
Oh, no! That was great. That was actually a perfect Vin Diesel.
I'm a fan of those movies.
Everyone is.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. There were two thoughts that I had when I was watching the Klingons. One, I think we are set up to get the most in-depth perspective and look at an adversary than we've ever gotten before in the Star Trek universe, right? Like, I think we're going to go deep into the Klingons and see their side where we haven't really had that happen before. And I also think it's interesting because I think outside of DS9, we have an adversary that's introduced in the very first episode that you can see this is going to go on, where in previous, you're looking at almost a new villain of the week from time to time, right? With some mm-hmm. reoccurring pieces. But we've never really gotten that deep into, like, Ferengi mythology and understanding. But so we're going to get deep into the Klingons. I think with their look, the only thing I'm trying to figure out is how do they evolve from the Klingons that we see in Discovery to the Klingons that we will know later on, particularly in TNG. Right, like
I'm grow lovely mullets, I believe.
Well, I mean, it's.
Are you talking physically?
I mean, physically, the ridges, their hair is very different. And when I think about some of the other characters, like we as humans, we don't evolve that much between this point and kind of this future point. So I'm a little curious how that's gonna kind of work its way into the show.
I mean, this feels in a similar regard to trying to compare, like, technology on the ship.
Yeah.
If you look at when Discovery is taking place, as far as I can tell, it's 10 years previous to the original series, and that would be 110 years from TNG. Am I learning this correctly?
100. Okay. Well, it's 100. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So if that's the case, you look at the technology, you look at the design of uniforms, you look at, like, all those aspects. It's not practical in modern day to try and really make things look as budget and still, like, say, oh, this is in future space. Like, why not embrace the technology we have, the design department that we have, and make it look cool and just say how we visualize the original series. That one was the one where it was. Also, isn't it weird? Like, that was just a bunch of humans and Spock. Like, you look at the diversity of all these other ships, just aliens and cyborgs all over the place, and this was 10 years previous?
Yeah, there was one guy from Daft Punk on the ship. That was interesting.
I mean, that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I think I read somewhere that there are going to be some continuity challenges, but what they're saying is, bear with us, and either we'll explain it later on in the episode, or the following episode, or a few episodes later. But to your point, Grant, you watch the original series, and the only alien on the Enterprise is Spock, where 10 years before, it's like diversity has exploded
right?
into space.
Yeah.
So we're like, well, what happens that they're like, all right, all you guys got
to
go?
As far as I understand, Klingons used to be like just white dudes like me with like a bad goatee.
They did, yeah. Yeah, and to that nerd point, like, we're all talking about, wow, this is a war show. There's a lot of conflict. This isn't like TNG where everything's wrapped up at the end of the episode. This is some dark shit happening. And of course, that's modern storytelling, right? But I think it fits into Star Trek lore pretty well. Like, we're talking about, and I think this was mentioned a few times in the premiere, we're explorers. And it seemed like they weren't prepared for this conflict. And now you guys are talking about, we're making a joke that, oh, in the Kirk era, there's one alien on the ship and everyone else is human. Why is everything so diverse now? It could be possible, from the reading that I got from this premiere, that we are getting a story that maybe leads the Federation to slow down on its diversity program a little bit, because they...
Or they burn their bridges and everyone else is like...
Yeah, that's more likely.
No, we're not going to work with you for a while.
Yeah, because they contacted this alien species they haven't seen in 100 years and all of a sudden, war.
I guess the struggle that I had with this was they felt, at least in the pilot, they felt very naive to me. And I'm thinking, having, you know, I'll admit that I've seen a number of episodes of Enterprise. Battle with aliens is not new. Like, this is the first time they've, you know, had a first encounter with someone. And they've talked about, like, clearly Michael Burnham's character has had a negative interaction with the Klingons, yet they stumble across this thing and they're like, hey, let's go check it out, this will be cool, why can't we look at it? And they're just like, let's just go do it. And I'm thinking, there's no sense of, well, let's be careful and cautious. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm looking at the, hey, we're not sure what it is, red alert, like, just go raise the shields right now, we'll figure it out later.
Well, if they haven't had an encounter with Klingons in like 100 years, and maybe most things have been relatively peaceful, I can understand them falling into a sense of naive ease about certain things and be like, oh, well, this is Federation territory. Whatever that little mysterious object is there, let's just go check it out.
Now, I haven't had someone rob me in quite a long time, but you know what? I'm locking my door at night.
Like, I mean, no, but it's fair, you point. Know, they're explorers. That's what I mean. That was a big theme here. We are explorers. We're not necessarily, you know, this isn't a warship, you know, and that really fits in really well with Star Trek lore, I thought.
Yeah. Well, and I think that Saru has your response. That's what he says to do. He was like, 100%. Hey, guys, like, slow your roll. Like, I'm not saying let's peace out and turn around. We don't know what that is. And as he said that, you know, I was kind of like, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me.
Saru's that voice of reason. He exists to say those lines so we can go, well, at least someone presented that. Now let's get to the fun part where we get to get on the ship and go check it out anyway. Because that's more in line with, like, Captain Kirk, right?
Oh, yeah.
Punch first, ask questions later.
Or kiss first and figure out the consequences afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good thing you bring up. Do you guys feel that Michael Burnham has an analog in old Trek characters? Did she feel like Kirk, Riker, somebody you know?
I think to me she feels most like Kirk, like this rebel. I'm gonna break the rules. Yeah, I think that's who she feels most like to me.
The Violet backstory, and then coming onto the ship as being physically strong and, like, ready to pull the trigger is a little Tasha Yar-ish. But I think of the characters who lasted, I would also go with Kirk.
Spoilers for TNG.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I will say, like, one thing I really
like. It's been, like, 15 years.
It's been more than that.
Tasha Yar doesn't make it.
Aww.
She did.
Well, she did with Data.
Oh,
nailed it.
Nice.
It's an android dick joke.
And he was
so did Data.
That's true.
He nailed it.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But it was Tasha Yar.
He was fully functional.
I don't know what's going on. I was just trying to play the game.
Yeah, it was. One thing I really like about her character is that it offered, so there was so much exposition that felt a little forced. Some of it was a little bit better. One of the things I thought they did really nicely with her character, when we talk about kind of tying in the overall Star Trek world, is that she's kind of right in a way. When she says we needed a Vulcan to hello these fuckers, she's kind of right. But the captain tells her, we're not going to betray our values. We don't shoot first. And even after the shit hits the fan, the captain never backed on her decision not to shoot first, because that's what Starfleet is about.
So she's kind of sort of right too.
So it was great to see this early on, both being shown, not just told, the kind of value of Starfleet and the values of the world that we're looking to, but then at the same time see how hard fought something like that is and how you have to kind of work to not become part of the problem.
It was a good way to dramatize that tension between the ideals of Starfleet and the reality of what's out there.
Yeah.
And this is the proper time to do that. It's 10 years before Kirk. We're definitely more along. Enterprise is what, like 100 years before this series? Something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe 90 years. So it's where the crew we see here is definitely a little more, I would say, progressive, more Starfleet we know, closer to TNG than the Enterprise crew. The Enterprise crew is just like NASA bros up in space. Yeah. So we're definitely more, you know, more along in the future and closer to that Starfleet ideal. But that's not fully developed yet. And I like that they're dramatizing that as the first story for this prequel.
So here's a question I have for you guys. So we see that Michael Burnham has incapacitated the captain and then rushed onto the bridge to do what she wants. Are you cool with that? Like, she had to do what she had to do? Or was that like, what am I seeing here?
It seems like it's easy to fall into like buying into what she did was right more than just self-righteous, because we, the omniscient viewer, can see what's going on the Klingon side. Mm-hmm. So we know things are gearing up, and if they're able to get those guys there and then convince them to join in this like war potentially, then things can go sideways. But from their perspective, as a we come in peace motto federation, yeah, it does seem like she kind of went off the rails there unjustifiably.
Yeah, I agree.
But that was just a front and center way to dramatize the conflict that is at the center of this show. That tension between the Starfleet ideal of we're explorers, we don't shoot first, and the no, we're in danger, we have to shoot first. You know, that was just a way to put that, to display that in our two main characters here. I think it worked pretty well. And I love that she knocked her out with a Vulcan neck pinch.
Yeah, but I mean, for everything that she was trying to do, I kind of looked at those ships and said, I don't know that anything that you throw at them is going to work.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah.
No. Call Riker.
With Michelle Yeoh's character, Philippa Giorgio, the captain of the Shenzhou, I was sort of mixed on her. I feel like, especially, I mean, we haven't really gone into that intro, but that intro in the desert was terrible.
It was not good.
It wasn't good.
Tracing the path of the, what is it called? The logo, the Starfleet logo?
Emblem, yeah.
The emblem.
That was just so corny. Like Ashley was saying, what needs to happen?
Yep. Yeah. So, what needs to happen, potentially in the comments of this podcast, or, you know, on Imgur, wherever you feel is it's best suited, just make sure and link it to us so we could see it. When it pans out, I don't want to see the logo. I want to see dick butt. Like, I was sitting there. I was like, holy shit, is Star Trek about to troll my ass? I'm going to get trolled. Don't look. Don't look, guys. Don't look. Oh. I would have preferred dick butt.
Yeah, I thought we were watching American Vandal for a second.
It was just ridiculous. But, you know, Michelle Yeoh, as the captain, I bought her authority, but I felt like her character had a little bit of just kind of surface level. I didn't fully buy into like a lot of like her relationship. And then, unfortunately, when we see the credits and it says guest starring Michelle Yeoh,
dun, dun, dun.
As a frequent TV watcher, I think we all know what that means.
Yeah, I've pulled away from being emotionally invested in that character. The minute I saw that.
Right.
Apparently, they should have just said, and as a red shirt, Michelle Yeoh.
You're totally right. And not even as a TV watcher, as a huge Star Trek fan who's been following a lot of what's going on with this show, including all the press, including watching everything that happened at Comic-Con. Okay, Michelle Yeoh has consistently been the one cast member that doesn't show up to any of the events and who's not around. So, yeah.
She phoned it in.
She's not going to be around for a long time, right? We kind of know this. But I think if, you know, and we'll see, we're only talking about episode one. So if we see in future episodes, if she does, you know, if she truly is a red shirt, the challenge for the show is going to be not if they make us feel for her loss or make us feel emotionally attached to her so we feel that loss. But I think since we're so entrenched in the mind and heart of Michael Burnham, whether we feel for Michael Burnham when she reacts to the loss. Because
I mean, it has the potential.
They're pretty tight.
Yeah, and it has the potential of going the other way. She betrayed her captain, so she has to go on another ship.
That's true.
She just gets kicked out.
Fair, too. You can't just go around sleeper holding people.
She's a goner. We know it. She's a goner.
Round upon.
That's the Vulcan goodnight.
So one thing I really liked about this show, I was a big fan when The Expanse came out. I thought they were doing a really good job. And one of the things I love about that show, that those books, that whole series and that whole kind of world is that it's I think really rare that you have a situation where like World War II breaks out, where there's like this obvious kind of foe and people band together and they go, they fight the foe and then the foe ends and then you know, so on and so forth. I think more often than not, a series of unfortunate events gets people into really bad situations. And I think that that's like the Cuban Missile Crisis could have led to a serious war kind of a deal. I feel like that's more how these heartbreaking, huge loss of lives kind of conflicts happen. And you can see that kind of unfolding a little bit in just this first episode where, yes, the Klingons are instigating. Somebody was going to try to stop them. That didn't work. It could be misinterpreted. There was probably an opportunity where you could have gotten the Great Houses away from this new guy. That didn't happen. And we're sort of slowly going to a head that is going to be sort of like what happened in The Expanse.
I think the thing that it's very subtle, but I was really excited about, and Grant, I think you coined the phrase a minute ago, this the omniscient viewer, and particularly if you're a Star Trek, kind of a Star Trek head, was we got to see the very first time that the Federation found out about this cloaking technology.
Right? Yeah.
Right? Like, they were like, what's going on? There's no warp signature, and the thing just uncloaks in front of them. And it was like, I mean, this is a big deal.
It looked badass.
It did look badass.
And you kind of know, if you follow Star Trek, you know that at some point, you know, there are rules about cloaking, right? Like, they have these treaties about who can even research cloaking technology, whether or not you can cloak and fire. I know I'm going way deep in nerddom. Whether you can cloak
this
and fire.
This is a Star Trek podcast.
Yes, I know. I haven't even scratched the surface yet.
Look at what I'm wearing.
Very true. But it was this moment. It was like, wow. Like, it's for those of us who've kind of followed the series, you got to be there for this seminal event. And I was like, that is so cool. And I'm hopeful that there are going to be more touch points like that throughout this show.
Yeah, that was really cool.
So let's jump into some of these other characters. I was actually pretty excited that Sarek was going to be a character on this show, because Sarek has, much like Spock, has been around for a number of different Star Trek incarnations. He was in the original series. He did a guest spot on TNG, and he's Spock's father. So this means if he raised Michael Burnham, she's part of Spock's family. So I know you, Clyde, last time we talked about this on the mic, you were kind of excited for the potential for, I guess, I don't want to say crossovers, but the show pulling characters from series past. So what'd you think about Sarek and the potential for this show to pull out those characters from series past?
You know, it's one of those things that Spock never, ever, ever mentions a sister, a relationship with Michael Burnham at all. So I am not expecting much. I am looking forward to, at some point, this idea that Michael Burnham is aware of Sarek having a child, right? I think that's going to be the moment. And you know, I imagine that, you know, if this thing goes 6 or 7 seasons or something like that, that we'll see that. But I'm a little confused, because if you think about it, Spock is a grown man when the original series takes mm-hmm. place, which means that Spock right now, he's 10 years younger than he is on the pilot episode of the original series.
So he's like in his teens.
So where the hell is he?
He's at the mall, bro.
I'm kind of confused there, but I am looking to see if there are going to be some touch points. I wasn't blown away by Sarek.
No, you don't like James Frayne?
I think he's fine. Yeah. His character, I was looking for a little bit more gravitas that we've seen before. And I think there's an opportunity for them to flesh out his character. Because what we know of Sarek later on is like I mean, he's legendary in terms of his knowledge and his wisdom and his influence and his esteem. And I just haven't quite seen that yet because we've seen bits and pieces.
He kind of reminded me of Lee Pace in the Hobbit movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a little kind of a know-it-all and kind of a trickster maybe. I don't know. He just kind of like, I could give a shit, you know, a little bit.
I really like James Frayne.
Yeah.
As an actor. He pops up in like everything.
He does.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's plenty of time for us to see more of him if he's like this mentor and he's still like kind of around. For is he a mentor? Is he a father? I got the feeling he's just like a mentor. Like he's
like a mentor. Like it seems like his family took her in. So maybe definitely a parental figure. But she definitely has the potential to hang on his every word because when they first come into contact with the Klingon, she goes straight to Sarek. She excuses herself from the bridge, Michael Burnham, and runs straight to Sarek. And this is where we learn what the Vulcan hello is and that we should attack the Klingons right away. What did you think about Sarek? Do you remember him at all from the previous shows?
Yeah, I think in STNG, doesn't he end up dying? And his funeral is quite an event, isn't it? I think that's...
Does he die? I know he's very ill when
he gets sick, and there's a whole thing about...
Mind melding with the card, right?
Yeah, and there's a whole thing. So he definitely gets sick, but I don't think he dies at the end of that.
Yeah, you're right. I think he does pull through, and then he goes back to...
Yeah, it's very dramatic, like, illness that he gets.
Yeah. You guys are right. He does.
And it's like a... it's almost like a psychotic break for Picard. It's so kind of traumatic.
What does this say about Michael that she would go to this Sarek guy and get advice and just kind of overrule her captain as well? Like her grasp of the chain of command, is she a good like first officer?
Well, I mean, I think they're just trying to point to the conflict that is in her heart and her mind. Am I truly a Vulcan or am I human, right?
I think that's a Coldplay song, yeah.
He sings about it on the beach.
Yeah. Are we Vulcan? Are we human?
But I also think that, you know, to your point, Grant, she had this moment where she looked and said, I know what's better. And so she took it to her captain. Her captain disagreed, and she straight knocked the captain out. Like, that's a bit of a bold move.
Pretty
like,
aggressive.
Wow, you don't agree with me. All right, well, here, I'm a Vulcan neck pinch you.
I agree with Ashley that Doug Jones playing the Saru guy, fascinating. I think he was the most fleshed out, even in minimal dialogue, character. Already, I get this great sense of him. When he gives that speech about the Predator and Prey thing.
That's fucked up.
I got such a sense of him as, like, Abe from the Oddworld games.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're food, and you're, like, in this weird society, but you escaped, and you've made something else of yourself. He kind of looks like him,
because
he's the same guy who played Abe Sapien in the Hellboy stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and Hellboy is exactly what I was picturing as you were saying that.
Yeah.
Is in that movie.
I think that's what I want, though. I want more of that, because I do, when we talk about, okay, well, who are the characters that we know? We know Michael Burnham, and I feel like we know Saru a little bit more in depth than we probably know about anyone else.
Yeah. I get a good sense of him, and I like the dynamic between him and anyone else.
I mean, do we even know the name of the redhead navigator? No. It's just like
the
yeoman.
Other people that just show.
like
Lobot.
Like no, yeoman. Like a yeoman. I'm like, well, where's your red shirt? Because you're probably not gonna make it.
Yeah, they're just staring at the screen going, oh, shit, what is happening now?
Can I have a line? No, you can't have a line. Get out of here, Richard.
I also am very curious. So I am on board with this more kind of action-packed kind of world that we're probably going to be in with the show. But I am looking forward to the name of it just left me. What is the name of the bar in STNG?
10 Forward.
Yeah, 10 Forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am looking forward to Daft Punk, Saru, and these people just like hanging out in 10 Forward. Like, this is the
cherry redhead world. Just hanging out. Did she really knock the captain out? Like,
yeah,
what the
exactly.
fuck?
Did you see that? That move was bold.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
I can definitely see Saru. So even though like Saru is the most alien looking character, like he's the one we're all going to relate to, right? He's the guy, like you said, who's like, okay, this shit's fucked up. We shouldn't do this.
I mean, I can also see him being the stick in the mud to a lot of things.
Sure.
Which makes you go, ugh.
But he's also very entertaining, you know? So even when he's being a stick in the mud, it's fun.
All the other generic characters, I mean, we already said, like, a lot of the intro dialogue was really corny and heavy-handed, and Michelle Yeoh's character and Michael Burnham were acting like they don't know each other. And like,
and I didn't even really like the look of that planet. It looked like a cross between Tatooine and like a Trapper Keeper I had back in the 90s. I wasn't super into it.
And I'm not going to lie, I was a little annoyed by the fact that you had these aliens that were like creeping around the water hole.
Like bug aliens and humans?
And no one addressed that they were there at all.
Like, yeah.
And they kind of looked threatening.
Yes. Like, you know? I thought I was like, oh, we're about to get a battle scene in the first, like, the first stanza. And
now let's just drag our feet for a while.
Yeah.
We'll
and I was
okay.
Like, we're literally. Pretend, like, yes. We don't even see them. We don't even know they're there. And we're just going to go on about our business drawing Star Trek emblems in sand.
But like, even once they get up to the ship, I'm like, okay, they're going to fix stuff here. But they get up there and the whole like the quick banter between the people, like as they're like setting up shop and
so
the
fast.
Ship, it felt a little clunky.
Yeah.
And like everyone was kind of being snarky and Michael says, is this sarcasm even necessary? As if she's never been there around them before. I'm like, yeah, this is just how we bond.
It's like, let's establish our dynamic right away for the TV show. Yeah. But we do talk about, we are talking about the characters on the ship. Like I said, we didn't see a lot of the stars of this show. Like, where's Jason Isaacs? We didn't see Anthony Rapp. You know, these are characters that are yet to be introduced.
We saw Terry Serpico for like a minute.
Who's that?
The Admiral.
Oh, okay. The guy who looked like Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I totally thought that was him. Yeah. Like, oh, no, it's not him. Okay.
Good for him. Good. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I saw him. I was like, there's a dick Admiral that's going to die, like they always do. Oh, they rarely use the space Skype. They used... holograms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straight up holograms, yes. Too. They were hardcore.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good.
I like the holograms.
You know what part made me sad? Do you remember when she gets in her Mass Effect suit, basically?
Yeah.
She's about to, like, shoot off over to check out the
I had that same thought. I was like,
did it totally look like Mass Effect?
It did. I was like, nice.
So when she gets in that, there's the guy who's, like, giving the flight attendant speech, and I was just thinking...
No.
That joke is not funny in modern days. Do you think that's still going to last another 250 years to whatever star date they're living in?
Yeah.
That's the most like depressing thing about Star Trek ever, that guy would be like, yuck, yuck, guys, fasten your safety belts. We're going to have a miserable meal. And I was just like,
I will say I was sitting there thinking the same thing. I was like, wait a second. We're in 2056, and you're making flight attendant jokes? No one travels by plane in your time, buddy.
What's the deal with airline food? No, just stop.
That was probably my darkest moment in this premiere. I was 2 seconds away from walking up and hitting the stop button and saying, podcast canceled.
Yeah.
Seriously, that was not
good. We're done. We're out.
We're done. But it did progress and get way better. So
yeah, like moments later when she runs into the Klingon and her suit is scanning his. And like unidentified, and then it falls on the Klingon shield that you right. see always on the radar and always pop up whenever their warbirds show up.
Yeah,
that was sweet.
I will say that was a great moment.
Nailed
like I was
it.
Watching it, and I'm the entire time I'm thinking, you are so stupid. Well, I don't say stupid. I thought they were really naive, right? I'm like, oh, let me go do this, and yeah, you're not gonna be able to talk to me, and I'm just gonna go and let me walk around this thing, this alien thing, and I'm like. This is a completely just terribly bad idea.
Michael, you straight up murdered a dude.
But
that kind of bad?
But that moment where it was like proximity alert, like I was like, oh my goodness, we're like, here we are. And I turned, you know, she turns around and I'm like, oh, it's a, that was a great moment. I thought the reveal of that was fantastic.
I didn't expect a straight up Klingon to be standing on the hull of a ship in space, like, let's play.
Yeah, or like kind of like the tragedy of getting killed with your own sword.
Mm.
Like, I feel like for Klingons, this is like Game of Thrones shit. Like, yeah, like that was hardcore.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if we're seeing this through the lens of our protagonist and we're like, oh, she's justified. But no, if this was your ship, some alien landed on it, you get out.
In a Mass Effect suit.
Like, and they're just like starting to say stuff. They have little fires blazing all over their suit. It looks super intimidating. Yeah, I'd go for an attack too. That guy was justified, and she just goes and kills him, and then peace out, and let's start a war with you.
But they
I
come
get
in
the
peace.
Complaints about the Federation, I think, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're a bit aggressive and thinking they own space.
Seems very American.
Yeah, I mean, the Federation's, well, some would say the United Nations, but they're America.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, I don't want to go there too much, but I tend to think that in this world, the Klingons have a fairly obvious kind of political...
Oh, for sure.
Like, representation, which could be looked at as America. It was very kind of, let's unify, let's get back to what we had.
It's extreme nationalism.
Yeah, and so it was kind of interesting. So I think this is the one case where I'm like, I'm not sure that the Federation represents America like I'm used to it mm-hmm. in most of the series. Mm-hmm. So, which is fascinating. It makes it kind of interesting to watch to see what happens.
It's curious to me, though. I mean, when you are living within a society, to want to be nationalist and isolationist and like suddenly break off from that, that's affecting a lot of other people. But from what I can tell of the Klingons, they just want to be left alone, like to their own devices outside of the rest of society.
But there
could be a bit of a different line there.
Well, they do see the, and I think it was pretty clear in the premiere, they do see the expanse of the Federation as a coming threat. There was a theme that your borders are encroaching too close to our territory, you know? So they do see that as a threat. That's why they're striking out.
Yeah, and they can be a little... they would be at home in Trump's America. Like they,
100%.
They like their borders, and they're a little, they're trigger happy, not for the just because it's fun and they love their swords / guns / whatever. But like it's honorable.
All piecing together.
Yeah, it's okay. Like it's like super. Like the best thing that can happen to you if you're a Klingon is that you die in battle, kind of
yes.
like mentality. So also right. that glorification. You know, watching Star Trek, it hurt my heart a little that there's also some Navy SEAL show that's coming out. You know, and it's just. That would be well-suited in Klingon society, yeah. I think.
There was one other thing that I really appreciated in this show. It was a little thing, but they had trouble from their main deck. What's that called? The control room thing?
Bridge.
The bridge. They had a lot of
noob
from the bridge being able to spy what was chilling in that little galaxy, the Klingon ship.
Uh-huh.
Not galaxy, a little...
Scatterfield.
Sure. The binary star system.
There you go.
I don't know what you guys think. Anyway, I love that they just went over to Michael's room because she happened to have an old school telescope that they could look through.
That was great.
It just seemed like a nice, like low-tech troubleshooting thing. And I was like, oh, I appreciate that.
They did that sometimes in the original Trek, but it was more like, oh, I had this telescope. We can't use it for anything, but look how cool it is. And let's appreciate that. But here, since it's a bit of a prequel, that shit still works. Yeah. We can still use it. I like that too. That was great. Okay, so it seems like we're all cautious but positive after this series opener, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I liked
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
All right, cool.
I'm very optimistic.
So go to StarTrekPod.com, subscribe. You will also find a podcast episode about episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery, which we're going to record right now. And before we go, I just want to thank a few people for supporting us during our launch. Miguel Guerrero, Court Robinson, Dan Bustead, Jane Bursaw, Troy Heinrichs from the Blacklist Exposed podcast. I want to thank you guys a lot. And there's a lot more people I want to thank, but we'll save that for future episodes. So remember, find us on StarTrekPod.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. At Star Trek Pod. We are a permanent record podcast. Visit permanentrcrd.com for more awesome TV podcasts. And please do support us on Patreon at patreon.com/StarTrekPod, where you can access all the bonus content and some mini episodes we'll be recording this season for Discovery. If you go there now and support us, you'll be able to listen to more Discovery theory talk. So please support us at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Guys, thanks for doing it. Live long and prosper.